Coming up, Lav and I talk about big game ROM and a playoff that might not need more explaining this year. We'll figure that out. Welcome to the Golf Central Podcast presented by TaylorMade and the all-new Sim Driver. The driver head was in need of a drastic change in order to provide more performance, so TaylorMade changed the shape altogether with their new Sim Driver, which allowed them to make it fast and forgiving where every golfer needs it, in the downswing. The pros love the new shape, but the biggest reason TaylorMade changed the shape was to make you into a better golfer. Check out TaylorMadeGolf.com for more information on the all-new Sim family. We're going to get straight headfirst into the playoffs. But before we do, Jon Rahm did it again. He loves 11th hour theatrics. What did you make of that finish on Sunday, Lev?
Well, first of all, I was very envious of our colleague Will Gray, who was on the ground covering last week's BMW Championship. I was envious because I was at the first playoff event and nothing happened. Dustin Johnson shot 30 under par and he won by 11. It was one of the most boring tournaments I've ever covered. And all hell broke loose for Will Gray last week. You obviously had a lot of discussion around the social injustice early in the week. And then you had Tiger failing to make the tour championship. You had Rory with the surprise birth announcement to at least a lot of us. And then you had this 1-2 duel in a playoff, first time that 1 and 2 have gone head to head in a playoff since 1995. And just the sheer insanity of those putts, just to think of what DJ was able to do on the 72nd hole, holding that 43 footer down the slope. And then Jon Rahm on the first extra hole, 66 footer. And Rex, think about this. This putt was down a slope with about 20 feet of break. Golf statistician crunched the numbers. That putt, that 66-footer, had a 1.4% make rate and a 28% three-putt rate. He was almost 28 times more likely to three-putt that than to make it. And so to do it, I mean, DJ just laughed, and that's all you could do. It's not like this was a heartbreaking finish for him. You got to tip your cap and say that's the way it goes sometimes. I think DJ probably considered himself fortunate to even be in that position.
He was, and look, he needed to sink a big putt of his own on the 72nd hole just to get into that playoff. And with the expectations where they were, as you pointed out, after what the flat week that you got stuck with last week. And look, considering what happened last week, and you touched on all the big, the hot button issues next week, there is no way East Lake is going to be entertaining in the least. I mean, I know you and I are going to end up with these dog tournaments, and Will's going to end up on the winning side of this.
Of course.
But you pointed out the part that I love the most about that whole thing, and I must have watched it 15 times now. I love Jon Rahm's reaction, the way he's walking it off, and you can tell he's not sure what's – because there were so many things, this 1% chance, as you just pointed out, there's so many things he knows that still have to go right. There's no early celebration. There's no early putter raise. There's none of that. However, when he stops and the camera pans to DJ, DJ's expression is absolutely priceless. For a guy that does not have any kind of tell whatsoever on the golf course – he was devastated. That was a gut punch like you have never seen in golf before. And that, to me, was the most entertaining thing.
I mean, Dustin still had a 30-footer, and you know, he said he hit a good putt and it didn't really have a chance. So that was kind of a deflating way to end. You would have loved to see Rahm make that, and that kind of been the walk-off, but you're not going to get that every time. And I think that just the unlikelihood of those putts kind of overshadowed the way that Jon Rahm played over the weekend. You got to keep in mind that he headed into the final two rounds at 6 over par. I mean, Olympia Fields was playing more like a U.S. Open than it even did when it hosted the U.S. Open back in 2003 when Jim Furyk won, and it was kind of lambasted as a fake U.S. Open course. You had a player in Jon Rahm who shot 10 under on the weekend. That includes that very bizarre ball marking penalty. So he was really 11 under. And then if you include the birdie on the first playoff hole, he was even better. So I think it just goes to show, you know, I think the knock on this guy, right, was that he didn't have the mental fortitude to handle these tough setups. You and I were both at Memorial. We saw what obviously he was able to do at the BMW. The only two other tournaments this year that were even in the top four of difficulty this year were Bay Hill and the Honda Classic. I mean, Jon Rahm conquered two of the four hardest tests on the PGA Tour this season. It's been an incredible achievement. And I think this was just the cherry on top.
And there's something in the DNA, and we talk about this a lot, about some guys have that closer's mentality. Certainly Tiger had it for the better part of two decades, and you can point to Jack Nicklaus and all these other great players over the history of the game. However, if you look at John's, and look, this is a very small snapshot. He is still a very young player. He still has tons and tons of things that he's going to accomplish in his career. But he loves these moments. And you can say that about everyone. Everyone says we love these moments. But his first victory in San Diego was very, very similar with this huge, long walk-off putt on the 18th green at Torrey Pines.
For back you to time embrace, 30, yeah.
Yeah, for you to embrace these moments and to do this. Now, you pointed out the only drop shot he had on the weekend was the penalty during round three on the fifth hole when he does not put a marker down and picks up his ball. Again, looking at snapshots in time, his caddy's reaction. I don't know if you've watched that video. But Adam's reaction to what have you just done? Like, it was just this moment.
Are you some kind of stupid?
Have you lost your mind? Put it back down. But then I was reading the quote last night from what Rahm said afterwards. He can say that, you know, making the 6-footer for bogey in that situation when everything could have gone wrong kind of spurred him on. And the part that got me the most is he said to himself, okay, that's it. No more playing around. Let's go. So you're telling me that you had just been playing around up to that point, you're just breezing through life, skipping, oblivious, looking at flowers and butterflies. Is that what I'm to believe out of all this?
Yeah, I mean, apparently he had a long range session on Friday night and found something in his swing. But he entered the weekend at 6 over par. I mean, that's the highest halfway total of a non-major winner since 1990. Now, I think a lot of that can be attributed to the difficulty of the golf course. But John Rahm also wasn't playing well for the first 36 holes. And for him to go on a tear just kind of shows the completeness of his game and the firepower that he does possess.
And I'll say this, and we're going to get into DJ Moore as we start talking about the Tour Championship in Eastlake in this week's tournament. However, this is not a situation, and this kind of goes back to, I think, what Claude told you last week in Boston after he wins that event by a million strokes. It's you can see it coming. You can see it when DJ's game is in shape. He may get beat. Someone may stand up and shoot 11 under par on the weekend or whatever the case may be with John Rahm, and he may get beat. However, you know he's trending in the right direction. And I would still say that DJ number one, John Rahm number two, is about the best case scenario going into the Tour Championship you could envision at this point in the season.
Yeah, this is the first time that the top three players in the world ranking are also the top three in the FedEx Cup standings heading into the season finale. I mean, this is just a dream scenario for the PGA Tour. And Rex, when I was looking at kind of the course history of these three players now, as you look at Dustin Johnson, John Rahm, Justin Thomas, of course, this is year two of that staggered scoring start where DJ is going to be at 10 under, Rahm at 8 under, JT at 7 under. All three of these players could be considered horses for courses at Eastlake. You know, if you start looking at potential favorites, if you like at this Tour Championship, you'd be hard pressed to convince me that the winner is not going to come from that group, the group of players who are within three shots of Dustin Johnson's lead now heading into the Friday start.
No, and I agree. And look, I'm going to get into the staggered start and how bleak this is going to look for the guys on the back end. Because you pointed out DJ's at 10, Rahm's at 8, JT's at 7, Webb
good
Simpson.
Luck.
Good luck. Yeah, I mean, you're going to spot Dustin Johnson, who just won by 30 strokes or whatever the case may be. You're going to spot him, let's say 10 strokes for the guys that are starting at even par next week. You're there to pick up a very nice check and enjoy yourself, but don't expect anything big to come of that. But before we move on, there were two more players that I did want to talk about last week, and it was eventful on many, many fronts for Rory McIlroy, who seemed like he had broken out of that funk that he had been in since the restart. Yeah, I believe he had a share of the lead through two rounds. It looked like the same old Rory that we're used to seeing. And then it sort of becomes public knowledge. I believe Steve Sands is the one that broke the news that his wife, Erica, is expecting any day now. And then Rory talks about it, and you get the idea that, yes, all right, this suddenly starts to add up and make sense, and that there have been distractions off the golf course. Did you see that part coming up?
No, I didn't. I didn't see that at all. And in fact, I was taking the dog out, and I heard Steve Sands is – comment, and I kind of stopped in my tracks and went back to the DVR and said, did he really just say that Rory's wife Erica is expecting any day now? Because there had been zero mention of this all throughout the summer, and there was ample opportunity for Rory to make this excuse that, you know, I've got other things going on at home, it is this. Instead, he would just say that he's found himself his mind wandering, and he's having trouble, you know, generating the type of energy and momentum and adrenaline without fans on site. But this is kind of an excuse, right? Like he didn't have a top 10 this summer. He clearly wasn't playing well. This is the longest drought he's had in more than a decade. This is part of the reason why. I'm not saying it's the only reason why, but it is certainly a contributing factor when your wife is set to give birth and you don't know whether you're going to get that call anytime in the past month. That has to be it has to be a little bit distracting.
You were taking the dog out and happened to hear something. I didn't piece together exactly how that all went down with you, but
taking
I will say
the dog out, heard it, stopped, said,
how did you
went back?
You walked off the couch.
Yeah. And then, dog goes outside.
Got it. All right. I understand it. I was just
what do you think the dog's going to go out?
I don't know. I have boys to take my dogs out, so I don't even worry. I don't busy myself with that kind of busy work.
Oh, sure. I've got a 20-month-old. He's not quite ready for that task.
Cam's not heading out with him. The one part about Rory, and to your point, is what makes it so impressive. He has not hidden the fact that he needs balance in his life. He talks about it a lot. If you sit and listen to the books that he reads and the things that he engages in, he doesn't want to be defined by what he does in his profession. He wants there to be all of these different checkboxes in his life, and all of them need to be sort of in the same orbit for him to perform correctly. And absolutely, when you sit and you think about how, you know, he hasn't let us all in to exactly what they've been doing, but they have been married for a while, and he has talked about wanting to have kids. So you can get an idea of how important this was, and distracting is probably the word I would use. And I don't think he would ever use it as an excuse, but it is good to see, I guess, that there is something other than I just can't figure this out playing without fans. Like, that was the part I think all of us probably had a hard time wrapping our mind around.
Yeah, there's at least some explanation now for why he's gone. Let's see, 8 tournaments now, I think, without a top 10. I mean, he hasn't done that since 2009. And I think it is interesting, Rex. When are you getting up the Tour Championship this week? Wednesday?
Thursday. No, it's Thursday. It's a Friday start. So
I think it's going to be interesting. I'm not sure if. First of all, we don't know if Rory's going to play. He said he wouldn't hesitate at all to miss the season finale, depending on the timing of the birth announcement. I think you could make the case we're taping this on Monday. If she has the baby girl that they're expecting any time in the next couple of days, sure, you could see him buzz up there. It's an easy flight from South Florida to Atlanta, and see him tee it up in the first round. But he is going to miss the Tour Championship if there's any sort of conflict at all. And just for those keeping score at home, he would enter the opening round 7 shots back at 3 under. He's one of those players who have slipped in the standings post-pandemic shutdown.
So he's one of those ones you're referring to as good luck anyway. So he would be a good luck.
He's the defending FedEx Cup champion. I wouldn't put anything past him. But when you're going up against DJ, Rahm, and JT and giving them a head start, you need to go, as Mark Leishman said, on an absolute blinder. A blinder. That is an Aussie term.
That means something different to me. But I, before we move on to the Tour Championship, and handicapping that field, and there's going to be plenty to talk about this week, considering the season that we've had, I did want to touch on Tiger Woods. We will be, in my mind, doing grades next week. It's probably going to take you a little while to figure these out, because the season will be over, and even though we still have 2 majors to play this year. Tiger Woods' season is over. He did not advance to the Tour Championship. If you could give him a takeaway in 30 seconds, what would it be?
A takeaway or a grade? That sounds like the same thing.
Whichever, by all means, give him a grade if that's what you feel.
I just think that moving forward, he's going to have a hard time playing at Eastlake and for the Tour Championship, just for the sole factor that it's going to be really hard for him to have a full schedule during a normal year that would be able to keep up with the rest of the top 30 players in the PGA Tour. And he's going to have to win. And I think that task is only going to get harder. You look at the BMW Championship field, Tiger Woods, this was making his 7th start of the season. That was 3 fewer than anyone else in the field. He won the Zozo in the fall, hadn't finished inside the top 35 during this restart. It's going to be a tall task for him to be among these top 30 moving forward.
It is. It was interesting. And my immediate reaction was, and the reason I even wanted to bring this up, because I was thinking incomplete. And I kind of went back and tried to think about how many times have I given him an incomplete grade over the course of his career for a season. And certainly there have been seasons where he played once or didn't play at all. I'm talking about 16 and 17, of course, those 2 seasons when injury has come into effect. And perhaps injury was part of the equation before the shutdown, because we talk about him not playing Honda Classic, which is a home game. We talk about
him not playing Mexico, didn't play Bay Hill, didn't play the Players
Championship. and all of those things you would probably assume without a lot of information that those were all physically driven, that there was some sort of injury that he just didn't want to aggravate at that time. However, since the restart, he went five events without playing. He didn't play until the tour wound up at the Memorial Tournament. And when I asked him why, it wasn't because of injury. It was because he wanted to see how things are going, which is certainly his right. He can do whatever he wants. They're all independent contractors, and I get that. However, you had all of these opportunities to play and try to turn this thing around. You chose not to for whatever reason. I would actually give him a solid D, simply because, yes, there's
we're not giving grades. I thought we're giving takeaways.
No, I went ahead and went with a grid. You can do whatever you want. You're an independent contractor. You can go out and handle it however you'd like.
You're giving him a D or a B?
D, as in dog.
He won a tournament.
He won a tournament in the fall.
He won – all right, what's 1 divided by 7? Like 16%? He won 16% of his starts – and that you're giving him a D?
So if that would have been his only start, would he go down in history as the only guy who won every single start?
Oh, it'd be an A plus. him and Iron Byron. Yeah. I mean,
there aren't any qualifiers, I guess, is my point in all of this.
Are you gonna change his grade with a week to think about it? Or are you gonna just do we like copy and paste this to next week? Or I thought we're giving takeaways.
I don't know. Since he's not playing the Tour Championship, I'm not quite sure that I can imagine any scenario where I would want to change the grade.
I'll go with B minus.
Oh, a B minus?
A B minus.
Wow. I mean, really?
Yeah.
Like, you and I aren't on the same page at all.
He won a golf tournament. Keep in mind, he was the very best player at the President's Cup in December. He had a top 10 finish at Torrey Pines, and then clearly something went amiss. Because he was last among those who made the cut at Riviera, where he complained of some back stiffness.
Then didn't play all those events that he
played. Quite frankly, we did not see him again for 5 months. So I'm not sure how you can knock him for that. I mean, you can only judge him based on the tournaments that he played.
Exactly what I just set that whole thing up with the idea that normally I would give out an incomplete because of injuries involved here, but this was not injury induced, at least not all of it.
Some of it was. You can only judge him on the tournaments he played.
I conceded that point, but he also had every opportunity to start up at Colonial like everyone else did and try to play his way into some sort of shape. Because I think what we saw over the last 2 weeks with back-to-back tournaments is he didn't play his best, but he at least got into some sort of rhythm.
Yeah, I mean, I still think he's going to need to somehow find this balance that he hasn't found yet between reps and rust. And this year, look, I think is just clearly a strange year for everyone. You weren't anticipating to have 3.5 months off in the middle of the season. He's very much used to a set schedule. He knows when he's going to take his breaks. He knows when he's going to play. He knows how he needs to recover. And that kind of was just absolutely blown up this season. But if he is only going to play 10 to 12 times tops in the 2020-21 season, he's going to have to win if he wants to be back among the top 30 players on the PGA Tour, because he's just not going to play the 20 to 23 times that the stars are. I think that was the original point of this discussion, is that the times that he does play, he absolutely needs to make them count. And there's no evidence right now that he's in position to do that.
I don't think it's an if he plays 12 times. I think that's probably his dream schedule going forward. And in the fall, we can sit here and try to figure things out. But outside of the U.S. Open, the Masters in November,
I mean, there is zero chance he finishes instead of top 10 at the U.S. Open, right? Zero?
That golf course does not seem to be where his game is at right now. Because if you look at the way he played, at least last week at Olympia Fields, which would be the closest thing to a U.S. Open test you would think he would play, statistically, it did not match up very well. He didn't drive the ball particularly well like you're used to seeing him.
Which was shocking because he was actually quite good off the tee in Boston and just completely lost it both ways.
Utterly different golf course as well. But it was his iron play that actually stunned me when you look at it statistically at Olympia Fields. He just wasn't as sharp as we're used to seeing him. Look, he has struggled with his putter. We all know that happens. He struggles with his driving.
That's a big thing. I mean, the putter is a major concern at this point, is it not?
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
How much more evidence do you need?
I don't need a whole lot more evidence. All right, before we get out of here, though, and you actually changed my mind, I'll go with C minus. So you taught me off that ledge. So I'm going to go with a solid C minus.
Nope. Going with a B-. It was D. Copy and paste it. Slap it on next week. Tag Tiger Woods in the tweet, and let's get this party started.
Let's see how it works out. So if we're handicapping the field, we've already done this. DJ starts at 10 under, Rahm at 8 under, JT 7 under. Webb, who took the week off, and I think he only slipped one spot, might be the genius of everyone not wanting to get beat up by Olympia Fields and be fresh at East Lake when he shows up for the finale. If you had to go down, I'm not going to read where everyone is. Is there anyone, I'll throw a number out there, at 4 under, who's starting at 4 under or worse, that you think has a legitimate chance?
I mean, so you're looking at 4 under, and right now that's Daniel Berger, Harris English, Bryce DeChambeau, Sungjae Im, Hideki. Hideki obviously coming off a good week at the BMW. Sungjae hasn't been the same player since the restart, unfortunately. He was the player who was number one in the FedEx Cup standings heading into the 3.5-month shutdown. Only has 2 top 10 since. Harris English playing close to home. Daniel Berger has been as good as anyone this summer. And Bryson DeChambeau hasn't been as sharp as late. So if you're going to put a number, I certainly wouldn't look at threes. Boog, if he can get hot, has a chance. Colin Morikawa starting at 5 under. He's never played this golf course before, so there is going to be a little bit of a learning curve for him as well. I've got my eye, like you said, at Webb Simpson. And I was, first of all, surprised that he was going to skip the BMW. And I think best case scenario for him was only slipping one spot. I mean, this to me is going to be interesting because I'm not sure we're going to see 100% participation next year after seeing what Webb Simpson was able to do, only slipping one spot heading into the season finale. That's not exactly what the tour wanted to see.
I don't think normally that would set up alarm bells in Ponte Vedra Beach, but in this particular case, I don't think so, only because there is probably only going to be 5 guys that will have this luxury. Maybe if you're first through fifth heading into the BMW. And
those are the guys that you want to have there.
You do. And you can make an argument that, look, that one spot may end up costing him, and maybe that'll change the idea. And I also think Olympia Fields and this season, the particulars of how much guys have played since the restart, and Webb Simpson being one of those guys that stacked a whole bunch of tournaments back to back to back after taking all that time off, both of these things factor into it.
And we also have the U.S. Open in 2 weeks, which he clearly has his eye on there.
Yeah, so I don't think this is any reason for Ponte Vedra Beach to get upset about. But I'm going to go ahead and cut it off at the 4 unders. And you didn't go to your guy like I thought you would. You came up short on that one. I thought you've been camping on Bryson DeChambeau since the playoffs.
You mean the player of the year, Bryson DeChambeau? Yes. You want to re-rack some audio?
Yeah, sure.
That guy who's totally changed the game?
Yeah.
That no one can hang with him?
Look, when he's on.
The guy
on the right golf course.
And the guy who hit like 23% of the fairways, fewest of any player in the field at BMW?
That's probably wasn't going to be his golf course. I think we're starting to see exactly what we both predicted.
He's going
to
have a field day with that thick Bermuda at East Lake. Ball nestling down. It doesn't matter how strong he is. Good luck stopping it on those firm, speedy greens if you're hitting out of the deep Bermuda.
And they come knuckling out. But I think 4 under is where I'm going to draw the line. Daniel Berger has had a brilliant restart. Boog. He's had a brilliant restart. Harris English, who did not have any status, or he had 126 to 150, which is virtually no status on the PGA Tour this year. He has had unbelievable restart. Bryson being your boy. I think all of those players at 4 have a legitimate chance because six shots over 4 rounds.
But you don't really think –
anybody under that.
You really don't think they're going to catch Dustin Johnson. If you throw out last year's performance when DJ obviously wasn't feeling great, he ended up having the arthroscopic knee surgery.
Why would I throw that out?
Look, if you throw out last year, he clearly wasn't feeling great. The 5 previous years, he had 4 top sixes and was 26 under par in that stretch. You look at John Rahm, 9 of his 12 rounds have been par or better on this golf course. Justin Thomas, this is a horse for course for him. Never finished worse than 7th. The winner is going to come out of those 3. One of those 3 is going to play well, and if it's Justin Thomas,
I'm not
going to
sleep on Webb. Don't sleep on Webb. I'll give it to the top 4. I believe the win is going to come out of one of those 4 is where I'm going with that.
You think Webb can hang with those boys?
On that golf course? Absolutely. I think he has enough experience there. If you look at as many times as he's played it over the course of his career, he's had solid finishes.
Webb Simpson, I'm looking at it right now. Thank you for bringing that up, Rex. Webb Simpson has never shot better than 9 under on this golf course in any of his 7 starts. Right. 3 times he has been over par. I just don't see a lot of low numbers out of Webb Simpson on this golf course. I don't see it. Making up a deficit of 4 shots to DJ? How?
You're assuming that DJ is going to be DJ of the last 2 weeks, and I don't think that's fair. And you're kind of glossing over those numbers, by the way. In seven starts, he's got finished.
There's nothing to gloss over. The best week he's had is nine.
There's three top fives. There's three top fives in there. Like but
it's a limited field.
Of course. So three top fives. Okay, so he's only really had two bad starts. So he finished T23 and 22nd in 2011 and 2014.
So, I mean, you would think he needs to shoot. Let's see, he's starting at six.
Again, probably you're assuming these guys are not going to come back at all.
I'm assuming they're not going to come back. What was the winning score last year? 15 under?
Again, I think you're giving these guys too much credit.
Last year, the winning score was 18 under.
If DJ Rory
shot 13 under par to win.
Again, relative to his finishes, he has three top fives in seven starts. So he has experience on that golf course, and that's relative to what the field was doing that week. So we don't know what it's going to do next week.
You've got to assume that those guys are going to shoot. Someone is going to shoot 10 under. Let's call it 10 under. So that would make the winning score in the mid-teens. We're looking at probably 15. 15 to 18 under par is the winning score. We've only got a 1 year sample size on this, right? And last year, Rory won at 18 under, Xander was second at 14, and Brooks and JT were third at 13 under. I think that's a safe range. That's a safe range to put these guys.
Yeah, I think the sample size makes it almost impossible to predict at this point, though. Because again,
someone's going to shoot 10 to 15 under on this golf course?
Sure, and if it's Dustin, then no one's going to get anywhere near him.
No one's
going to
sniff him. Yeah.
No one's going to – or if it's John Rahm or JT, probably no one's going to get anywhere near him. However, it's a difficult golf course. We've seen what it can do to people. All right, before we get out of here –
it's going to be hot. The ball's going to be going forever.
And I think we're all married to those top four guys. Let's call it Dustin Johnson, John Rahm, JT.
I'm really married on the top three.
I'm married to the top four. If any of those four end up winning next week, do they automatically win player of the year in your mind, or is there still more to be done? Is there still a larger conversation to be had?
I certainly think it's unsettled heading into the season, Fennel. I think you can put it that way. To me, the two leading front runners are Justin Thomas and John Rahm. Probably in that order, I put them 1A and 1B. And I knew we were going to talk about this, so I started diving into it a little bit. And right now, obviously we do not have to vote right now, but if we were to vote right now, I would give a very, very slight edge to Justin Thomas. But I also wouldn't be dissuaded if you told me that you wanted John Rahm. You look at John Rahm's resume this year, Rex. The two wins, we've gone over it. Obviously a FedEx Cup playoff event against the top 69 players on the PGA Tour this season. And he also won the Memorial, which, if memory serves, was the strongest regular season field ever.
Yeah, it was a major. Rahm, I'll give you that.
Yeah, John Rahm also has a top 15 in a major. He is a T3 in a WGC event, and he has seven top 10s in 14 events. Justin Thomas has played three more times, and in those three times, he has added an extra win, but all three of his wins have come against limited fields. They went in the CJ Cup, no cut event in South Korea. He won the Tournament of Champions, which is obviously a winners-only event at Kapalua. And he won a WGC event. Nothing to be taken away from that, but it was also the week before the PGA Championship with guys who've got two minds that week. Who do you think is the player of the year right now? It's very, very close. And I think I may have just talked myself into John Rahm.
Well, I think you just talked me into Justin Thomas. And it's easy for you to dismiss the CJ Cup and the Tournament of Champions. I get where you're coming with that because particularly Maui, guys are kind of showing up there. And granted, they are PGA Tour winners and all of these guys can play really, really well. However,
but they also haven't played in a month probably.
Yes, this is January. You're in the islands. You're relaxed a little bit. It's not as quite cutthroat. I would say Memphis is the standout and all that. And he also has a runner-up finish. He's got a third-place finish in there. And he has played more than John Rahm. I just think he's been more consistent than John Rahm. Because the one thing that throws me when I look at what John has done this season is, at least since the restart, it's either been feast or famine.
Strangely inconsistent.
So if I'm making the vote for the PGA Tour Player of the Year, as things stand right now, I would go to JT.
But JT, all right, so JT doesn't have better than 25th in the first two playoff events. He was outside the top 35 in the PGA Championship, and he's played three more times than John Rahm.
I don't think that three more times gets me as much as it seems to get you. And I would argue that
that's valuable playing opportunities in order to pick up another win.
This goes back to our Tiger Woods conversation. If you choose not to play, you can't penalize the guy who does play more. I mean, that's like the old world rankings. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Okay, but you can obviously make the case that Jon Rahm was one of the hottest players in the world heading into the shutdown.
You could have. I mean, the way he has come back out, and I certainly agree with you, the Memorial, the way I look at it, given the fact we only have one
main. It's basically WGC.
Or I would even give it a major status simply because of that's the deepest field on the toughest golf course of the year so far. So I would give that a little bit extra weight. But again, you're comparing three wins to two wins. I just don't know.
I think the PGA Tour players are going to vote Justin Thomas as player of the year.
Oh,
I would lean that direction.
So it's a popularity vote? Is that what you're trying to say here?
Very much so.
Really?
The same reason why Rory won last year over Brooks.
I get that. Same reason Ricky won Rookie of the Year over Rory McIlroy. Is that the idea
yes.
as well?
Yeah.
Wow. Now we've suddenly become xenophobic, so that's even worse.
I mean, that's the way I think they're leaning. And look, what if Dustin wins the FedEx Cup? Do you look at the way that he's played the last month and a half, and do you outweigh that of what Justin Thomas has done over an entire body of work, or what Jon Rahm has done during the entire 2020? I don't know. I think players would of how easily persuaded can you be? Because DJ really didn't do anything for the first half of the season. Now he was injured and he missed the fall and he played overseas early, but he hadn't done anything prior to the players, and they really hadn't done anything prior to the shutdown until he won at the Travelers.
No, I think players would.
And then he got hot.
And the reason I say that is, yeah, I mean, you immediately made last year a popularity vote, and I don't think that's entirely true. I think what it was is
a bit of a testament
to what players now value as what's important. I think, yes, consistency. And I do think there is something to do with the FedEx Cup and winning the season-long race. And look, major championships are always going to stand above. I don't think anyone's going to say that they do not. However, I think last year was a bit of a statement by players as a whole, saying that, yes, the FedEx Cup is important to us. And if DJ were to do it, even though he has done it his body of work this season has been relatively recently, I still think he would be player of the year in the vote.
Really? Do you think if Dustin wins this week, he's player of the year?
Well, that's three wins. It's everything else he's accomplished. We only would have played 14 events. So suddenly you're starting, you know, I'm going back to your logic now of only playing 14 events. So yes, I think so. Because when he has played well, he has been absolutely dominant. He hasn't been as consistent as you might have liked. But if he wins the Tour Championship, which would make him the FedEx Cup champion, that is consistent enough, I think, for players to vote him the player of the year.
I think that's fair. I mean, you look, if let's say he wins the FedEx Cup, he would have gone 2-1-2-1 over his last four starts. And that doesn't even include the win at the Travelers, which was a good field. In those first couple events coming out of the restart. And so I'm not sure you could necessarily hold it against him that he was still recovering from that fall 2019 knee surgery. So Dustin Johnson, player of the year, if he wins. What about your boy Webb? What if your boy Webb goes on an absolute quote unquote blinder and wins the Tour Championship / FedEx Cup?
I don't think it means what you keep thinking. It might mean that. I listened to the interview.
Yeah, that's what it means.
I get what you're saying. Yes, I think Webb would. That would be three victories. It would be.
You think Webb is the player of the year if he wins?
Top 10 finishes. Oh yeah. I would argue that.
Oh absolutely. Yeah.
I think again, it's a small sample size.
Phoenix, Harbortown, Eastlake. You think that's a good enough resume?
Yes, and the small sample size and the weirdness that is this season. Maybe we can have this discussion next week because that would be an interesting discussion. I think you could make an argument for Webb. It would be an interesting.
You can make an argument. It wouldn't win out. I don't foresee any scenario. What if Brendan Todd wins the FedEx Cup?
That would have been
three wins.
Yeah.
He also blew a couple of chances at the Travelers and Memphis. What do you think, Brendan Todd?
No, he would not be player of the year simply because I don't think he's been consistent, even though he has won over the course of the season. If you look at week in and week out, I don't think he's been consistent enough. I think
Brendan Todd could have been a 5-time winner this season.
The head-to-head with JT and Webb would be fascinating. If we're sitting here having this conversation next week, I will be curious to talk to players and see what they think about that one.
Well, Webb has played better in the playoffs than JT has.
Mm, we'll see. We're gonna have to do a blind resume test.
You gotta take the names out of it. You gotta take the personalities.
That's the only way to do it.
Just go straight up resumes and who you got.
That's right. And throw Brendan Todd in there as a placebo just to see if anybody bites on it. Yes, give me that one.
Bermuda.
There is no chance whatsoever I go to this tournament this week and there's an exciting finish. You got the dog. I'm going to get the dog. And Will got the greyhound, didn't he?
I mean, did you see the weather this week? It's going to be 96 degrees every single day.
We live in Florida. Have you been outside your house in the last 5 minutes?
I haven't. I'm very conscientious of those around me. Mm.
All right, I'll talk to you next Monday. Or no, I'll talk to you next Tuesday when I get
home. Tuesday.
Tuesday will be a day late on the podcast. That'll do it for this edition of the Golf Central Podcast presented by TaylorMade.